Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to VOCR Radio on the TerraJab Radio Network.
Good evening, everyone. Glad you could tune in tonight. It is our official launch for the spring-summer season, so 1 and 2 hour shows for the next 12, 16 weeks or so, and we hope to bring you valuable insight, information, and debates on issues affecting our world and the future of our society in general. We hope you interact with us either by calling into the live show or expressing your opinions through our virtual tech studio on blogtalkradio.com or by email, and we'll send that to you in just a little while. Riding shotgun with me tonight, of course, is Hugh Mack. And the phone line shall be open until 50 minutes before the end of the show. So get comfortable, kick back, smoke 'em and drink 'em if you got 'em. The show will be with you in 1 minute.
You are listening to VOCR Radio on the TerraJab Radio Network. 347-324-3287.
John's last-minute economic plan does nothing to tackle the number one job facing the middle class. And it happens to be, as Barack says, a three-letter word. Jobs. J-O-B-S. Jobs.
Of all the objectives we seek, first and foremost, is the establishment of lasting world peace. We know only too well that war comes not when the forces of freedom are strong. It is when they are weak that tyrants are tempted.
Ask what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Ladies and gentlemen, the purveyor of political pontification.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is Tuesday, May the 6th, 2014, and it is the second show of the new season. Somebody forgot to change the tape on me. Riding shotgun with me tonight is, of course, the sidekick, Hugh Mack. Hugh, good evening, sir. Hope you are well.
How are you doing, Carl?
I'm doing all right. As I was saying at the opening there, you know, for the next 8 or 9 weeks or so, and the next season, I hope we can get into some real chewy stuff. And the more our people out there pass their information to us, the more chewy it'll become, I hope. So we invite everybody to share their thoughts and call in if you wish. I have a note here. You were reminding me to give a big welcome to some friends down in the Lethbridge, Alberta area. They're joining our listeners tonight on Blog Talk Radio. And Hugh, you're always talking about civil disobedience and to stop big government and corporate corruption and corporate greed. These citizens down in Lethbridge, they managed to shut down any possibility of fracking within the city of Lethbridge. And I mean, it was a fantastic PR campaign and civil action. The residents of Alberta and elsewhere could mimic this method of stopping these dangerous practices. You know, well done, Lethbridge. And Hugh, what do you think about that? What do you think about this civil ability?
Well, it was by all accounts, it was a peaceful thing. Nobody had to get angry or violent. They just persevered, and that's usually all it takes if you're willing to stick it out and stand up for your rights and refuse to give away your rights. Nobody can take them from you. And these people did that. They stood up and they said, no, this is our city and we're not going to allow it. And I'm sure had it gone on longer, there would have been more and more people that would have taken on more and more. So congratulations to those folks in Lethbridge that organized and did that. And if you're listening right now, I would love to hear from you. Some of you could call in. I've got questions for you.
Well, I got to say it's one of the best civil actions that I've seen in a long, long time. And I bet the council chambers were never as active as they were when these people were complaining about this possibility of fracking. Now, you know, there's all kinds of arguments regarding fracking, whether it's safe or it's dangerous for the drinking water. What they're doing is, you know, good for the world and good for the earth. With all of these earthquakes that's happening around the world, and that Ontario mine collapse today. Now, I'm not sure if I got the story right, but it sounds like the mine, the nickel mine, apparently it is, and it sounds like the mine, first of all, experienced some shock waves, and then the shaft collapsed, killing two miners. But there was no report of any earthquakes or earth tremors in that region at the time. So I'm a little curious as to where those tremors or what that vibration was. I'll tell you, that's pretty curious. I'm going to be following up on that for sure. But
I'm sure it'll raise some interesting speculation.
What's your idea on this, on fracking? Have you really looked into this very much?
Well, basically, Colin, the way I see it is, if you're going to rip apart the earth in any way, shape, or form, you're not doing the earth or yourself any good, your environment. You know, I've said it before. I get tired of people standing up and saying, "We've got to save the planet. We got to save the planet." That's wrong. The planet will be fine. You got to save your place on the planet.
Yeah,
and
we're like,
you know,
we
stand here and watch these oil companies just rape our land. Well, that we know what we're going to get, and anybody that thinks it's for the better good, really, I think needs to either rethink it or pull their head out.
But at the same time, Hugh, you know, these oil companies are only extracting what our gluttonous need has created. I mean, we're saying we've got to protect the environment while we drive around in F-350s, you know, at 10 kilometers a gallon. You know what I mean?
It's like the chicken or the
we're
egg.
Not doing ourselves in, yeah.
It's like the chicken or the egg debate, but the fact of the matter is through their propaganda and their promotions and all of this and I suspect buying up better technology and burying it away, they've created the need. Well, it's not like this need just appeared in a vacuum. All of a sudden, people decided they wanted to gluttonize oil. It was a fuel that we used what 80 years ago, 90 years ago, maybe longer, when it was being used en masse. But it was a mistake. There have been better alternatives that have been designed since, but they don't make it to the light of day. And it might be our gluttonous
technology. You think the technology is being held back up for us? We don't need oil.
Look, Tesla coil. Okay, now I'm not saying that was buried away in a warehouse. I'm saying it's being used for far different things, and we're only getting the technology. But you're right, though. As long as we continue to buy it, as long as we continue to shop at Walmart, as long as we continue to create or to be the market for
That's the argument I have. I get the fact that we're raping the earth for minerals. I get that, right? But at the same time, we're the ones causing the demand. And I think I may have mentioned this to you off the air some months ago when we were talking about protests and what have you. But what really gets me is I watched a video on YouTube of some environmentalists protesting up in Northern Alberta. And everything was dandy. They were doing a drum circle. It was all wonderful. And I was really understanding the message they were giving. And then I looked up on the ridge and parked behind each other, as far as the eye could see, were F-350s, F-250s, you know, big, huge, massive machines, that all of these people had arrived to this point to protest. They'd all arrived in those vehicles.
I think if I was going to attend that protest, I'd be very tempted to, even if I drove one of those big machines, I'd be very tempted to maybe rent a little econo car somewhere. But I mean, even so, it's not the automobiles themselves, although they're certainly using their share of the oil, but it's the factories. It's the heating of the, I mean, you drive downtown in this city or any other city and lights on all night. All night the lights are on.
Yeah.
Okay. But we're told to have one day every year where we all turn our lights off. Well, how about you just turn yours off every night and see what that does for the, you know, the smokestacks that are shooting more smoke in an hour up into the air than I'll use in my car in a lifetime. How about all of those? Now those again, that's all consumer driven. You know, I don't want to say that it's not our fault, but everything that we buy, everything that we gluttonize, everything that we crave, that we have to go out and get, this is what's creating the market for them. I think we all need to just take a step back and breathe and take a look at what this almost unconscious need, this unconscious drive to consume.
Well, we've gone out of our
way. How much we're contributing to it.
Yeah, we've gone out of our way to make oil products the driving force in our society. And as I've said many times, you can't look around your room. You can't watch your TV or your computer without realizing that 80-85% of it is plastic, and that's driven from oil petroleum. Everything we touch, we went out of our way to use this product as the saving grace for our society, right down to our Tupperware. You know,
and
so
again,
although that's
a mistake,
now,
wasn't
but,
it?
You know, yeah. Yeah, I mean, but now you look at it, it's a point of no return because you can't, it's all right to say, you know, oh, we have to protect the environment, but what we need to do is get a grip on the consumption. Like you say, the lights left on downtown all night, 24 hours a day, there they are. Now, if you listen to some of the building operators, they're pretty proud of it because, well, it's an LED lighting system that uses 1/50th of what the old light bulbs used to use.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a good start, still a good start.
Yeah.
But there's no reason at all why those lights on each floor can't be put onto a motion sensor. And if somebody goes to that floor lights up. If there's nobody on the floor, the lights go out.
I've even seen that in grocery stores. Sobeys in Strathmore outside of Calgary here, you walk up and down the aisles, it's very dark, and the lights for the freezers and the lights for the cabinets go on as you walk by. And
Really interesting.
I would think from a marketing standpoint, it's probably better too, because, you know, when the light goes on for the first time and
almost
you see it, you tend to absorb that image and all the things that you're seeing at that. I think it's a good idea. I mean, you know,
I'm a firm believer in motion sensors. You know, these sensors are intelligent enough now that they know if there's somebody in that room or in that area, and
as long as they're not being used against us, I'm all for that. You know, but. Motion sensors can do things other than turn on lights too. They can read how many people are walking down an aisle in a store, and I mean, this is all data that's being used to sell you more.
But like you were saying with the analogy of the lights downtown Calgary, for instance, at night, you know, there's nobody on those floors most times except cleaners and maybe security. So there's no reason for all those lights to be on, and a motion sensor would resolve that issue. You know?
And a motion sensor would also make it for security in the building, make it easier for security in the building to determine if somebody unauthorized it somewhere in the building.
Exactly.
I agree with you.
I just think sometimes the senselessness of life is, I get the environmental issues that we need to do a better job with our planet. But look where we've come in 100 years, and I think we're doing a great job with our planet compared to what we had planned on doing to it. I mean, you know, the turn of the century, you know, when the factories were at full pelt in England and starting up in the United States and billowing in Japan, there was no consideration whatsoever of what we were putting into the air.
Well, you might be right, Colin, but I come back to, you know, I want to know, for example, all of the computers now, and of course, disposable now, you buy one, next year it's obsolete, you got to get a different one. You don't have to,
right.
But they certainly build them and build the programming and the updates and everything, so that sooner or later you're going to have to get a new computer because it's just not going to handle what they're doing.
Yes.
And of course they're talking
planned redundancy.
Well, sure, but what I want to know is, I mean, people talk about we talk about the oil fracking and the pollution that we're putting up and all of this. What about all the mercury and poisonous metals that are in your computer? So we know they're being recycled, but the last I heard was much of the crap that gets recycled in North America taken to the shores of third world countries,
Pakistan,
like,
and yep,
even Malaysia, and they're dumped. Sure, they have people trying to deal with it, but they're not equipped. They're not equipped for the, you know, they don't have all the necessary gloves and clothing and safety equipment.
I saw a video of that some time ago, and there was this mountain of computer parts, and these young kids, 6, 7, 8, 9. We're sifting through it to get the gold and the mercury and there was something else on the computer boards. I forget what it was, but it was a product. And you know, they would make $3 or $4 a day for pounds of this stuff, you know. So and like you said, there's no occupational health and safety. These kids are going to be dead or grow a third eye by the time they're 25.
Yeah,
you know,
on the other
it's
side of
disgusting.
The world. So
here
in North America don't care. You know,
it's
way over there. But you know,
we take it over to the recycle station, right? And they tell us what a good citizen we are and good job.
Yeah.
But what happens after that?
Yeah, it gets sent over there and they have to deal with it. But our shores are clean. Well, not so much now. And this the fallout from what's going on in Japan is another thing that the media doesn't want to talk about.
Fukushima.
You know, the cancer rate is what, 500% what it was before the accident, and there are children getting thyroid cancer, and
there's a 100 square mile section in the Pacific Ocean where everything is dead, everything.
Yes. Yeah.
Even the oxygen isn't making it. It's a dead zone.
And it's growing.
It's growing.
And
just after Christmas, right, late January, early February, there was a scientist on the West Coast that said he was starting to detect readings of radiation. And as fast as that story started to grow legs, it totally disappeared. I mean, it is gone.
Yeah.
So I don't know if anyone's monitoring it other than the government. If the government are monitoring, they're not going to tell anybody anything. But
there's a lot of
independent body out there.
You know, I heard John B. Wells talking about it, and he said, you know, there's a reason that they're not sending aid and all that over to Japan, and that's because it's finished. It's beyond help. That if Japan is essentially, for all intents and purposes, been wiped out.
It's doomed.
Now, Yeah, it's doomed. The radiation will eventually take everybody, and or, you know, certainly enough that Japan will cease to be a country anymore. And now, yeah, I don't know, but that seems to be what I've always understood about nuclear radiation, is that it will eat. It's very indiscriminate. You know, it'll take everybody that gets the radiation will.
Look at Three Mile Island.
Yeah.
You can still go to this day. You can go to the boundaries of that area, and you know, the fences are still up. It's still being protected by government officials. You're still not permitted in there, and nobody knows what happened and what, you know, whether it did eat into the core, whether it is spreading. That is, you know, it's from one crisis to the next. That's how we live. You know, we forget what happened a month ago.
Yeah, and then there was the BP disaster in the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah.
You know, this. I mean, so many high-profile people off mainstream and mainstream were talking about this could be the doom of the earth right there, because it's cracked. It's cracked the mantle, and if they don't, the oil doesn't stop gushing immediately, and didn't stop gushing immediately, that it'll be, you know, virtually always on the verge of just breaking apart. And
well, I look at the oil thing in a very, I guess, in a esoteric kind of way. I guess I don't believe that oil is made from dinosaur bones and ancient deforestation and all of that. I think that may contribute, but I think Mother Earth makes oil. I think she makes it to lubricate.
That's the abiotic theory.
And
there are a great many scientists that believe that as well.
Yeah.
That the dinosaur
and
thing. What a ruse!
Yeah, it seems to me that if you extract billions of gallons of this per day, we're talking billions, maybe even a trillion gallons a day from around the world. If you were extracting that much liquid from a sphere,
yeah.
Something's going to collapse.
Yeah.
It has to.
And I mean, how many dinosaurs? How many dinosaurs are there that could have left this much oil deposits?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean,
or forest. Otherwise, it doesn't matter. It's almost beyond belief. I think this is a Earth-made liquid that is used for lubrication of Earth, for the mantles and the plates, and it's part of the creation, just as salt, you know, just as hydrogen, it's part of the chemical combination that makes Earth a living planet, you know?
Yeah,
it's
a theory that makes more sense to me.
Yeah, but I think if you're sucking that much out of the Earth without putting something back, then there's bound to be earthquakes and fracking problems, if you will.
Well, what happens every time they talk about a shortage? Well, the price goes up, and then they never do seem to run out, and we never do seem to consume less oil. So, you know, even back in the 70s, they talked at one time about oil shortages and you know, this is going to run out and they're pumping more out of the ground now than they ever were.
Well, they just announced, actually yesterday, I think it was, that the most Alberta oil is now traveling down the XL pipeline, but it was railed into the United States. So, in other words, rail are the ones that took the oil to the pumping stations in the States and then threw it into the pipeline. And they're saying that there's... you know, this is the most they've ever pumped in a given time in eternity, and it's a drop in the bucket compared to where they can go. And I think the XL will get built. I really do. Especially,
it seems likely.
especially, now here we go. I got to do a little break of music in here before I announce this, but hold on a second.
I'm going to listen to my story about a man named Jed. A poor mountaineer barely kept his family fed. And then one day he was shooting at some food, and up through the ground come a bubbling crude. Oil, that is, black gold, Texas tea.
Ah, yes. The reason I did that is Mr. Black Gold himself, Rick McIver, Calgary, used to be on the council here in Calgary, went up to provincial politics, got a cabinet position in provincial politics, and has stepped down. He's announced a news conference for Wednesday at noon, and it looks like he's going to throw his hat into the provincial leadership race. This man is backed by some pretty big guns. Mm-hmm. I know Rick on a business level, and I got to tell you, this is one sharp cookie. This man, he's a little rough around the edges, and he reminds me a lot of Ralph Klein. Rick, he's got a very sharp mind, very sharp indeed.
Well, I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, a sharp-witted politician can do a lot more damage to you than a stupid one, you know. But coming off the heels of Alison Redford, I mean, we're probably sharp.
Yeah, but knowing McIver, I've had a number of conversations with him, very casual conversations. He's a very easy man to talk to, and I like where he comes from because he's still got that small town that I need to talk to my neighbors about this kind of mentality.
Yeah.
And I hope he doesn't lose it in the provincial mix because he's got a lot of really good qualities that I think would make a great Alberta premier. So that announcement comes Wednesday lunchtime. He's going to make the announcement. You know, good luck to him. We've got, I think the election or the race starts May the 15th. So that'll be May, June, the end of June. And then there'll be a leadership race coming up, I'm sure, for probably Wild Rose. And then they'll be getting ready for the 2015 election.
Right, and then we'll find out for sure who's going to be the next one in charge of selling us out.
Well, it's a foregone conclusion. It's not going to be your choice or mine, you know. You know, what I can contribute to this is exactly what we're doing tonight, Hugh, is get the information out, lay it out there, let the people review the information, let them be the judge. You know, I want to maintain being the purveyor of information and let the listeners out there make the decision. We're going to take a two-minute break, and when we come back, we'll get into some international stuff.
The VOCR Town Crier invites you to promote your ideas and opinions on the world at large. Live on air, 347-324-3287, by email, vocr2012@gmail.com. The voice continues after this. Tonight's information presented is the opinion of the speaker or host and may not be the opinion of the TerraChat Network or affiliate. Any information presented remains the responsibility of the speaker or host and not the TerraChat Network. Voice your opinion. Participate in your future. Become engaged in socio-political events. Say your piece. 347-324-3287, 347-324-3287. This is the VOCR, the voice of the Canadian Rocket on the TerraChat Radio Network.
Now is the time to heed the timeless advice from Teddy Roosevelt. Speak softly and carry a big stick. End of quote. I promise you, the president has a big stick.
Over the last several days, we continue to be deeply concerned by events in Ukraine. We've seen illegal referendum in Crimea, an illegitimate move by the Russians to annex Crimea, and dangerous risks of escalation.
347-324-3287. 347-324-3287. The purveyors of political pontification, Guru Nostra and Hugh Mack.
Yeah, the purveyors. I like that word, the purveyors. You know, purveying the information. That's the way to go, Hugh. Hold the presses. We've got a Sasquatch sighting by Squamish BC, Hugh. I was thinking of passing this on to the Night Talk boys, but we'll go with it tonight. What the hell? Huffington Post were announcing, Hugh, that an intrepid newspaper, of course, one of the reporters had been trolling the YouTube videos, and they're reporting that a BC man believes he may have spotted a Sasquatch in the British Columbia Mountains. Yep. Mr. Lamont.
Well.
Now, according to the Huff, he uploaded the video to YouTube 2 weeks ago. He claimed the video is about 2 years old, and he got it when he was hiking through the Tantulis Range close to Squamish. And it's a pretty compelling video. It's I've looked at it. Can't tell, you know, like you need to get it into NASA or CIA and get some really good focusing on it to find out what it is. But at first I thought, oh, yeah, just some other guy, you know, smoking some BC wacky, saw something and took a film of it and made a story, right? That's what I thought. Mm-hmm. But in the video you can see this, obviously a large black dot. It appears on the white snow. And it moves up the mountain, right? Now, I thought, okay, you know, this is just wild video play, right? Then it turns out that this Lamont, who uploaded it, is a wildlife biologist. And he's familiar with bears. And he is convinced, according to his narrative, that what he filmed definitely wasn't a bear. He said that the subject was clearly bipedal. And they wrote in their YouTube narratives that it was without any kind of snowshoes, no backpack, wearing wong-colored clothing, if clothing is the word. He said movement over this kind of terrain in soft snow without snowshoes would be very, very difficult. And the distance traveled over the given time period would have been very fast for a human without proper snow travel gear. So this YouTube's up there. It's in real time, and it's worth taking a look at. Just type in Squamish Sasquatch, probably Squamish. It's not a very big place, and I'm sure YouTube will pop up. And what do you think? Could Sasquatch still be alive? Could we have missed a missing link somewhere? Is it possible that there is another entity living out there among us that we're oblivious to?
I certainly don't see where there's any basis to rule it out. And, you know, it's very easy just to say, oh, well, you know, that's a wacky out there idea that there's a Sasquatch. But, I mean, I just think it's arrogant to think that we know it all, that we've uncovered all the species that live on or in the earth. And, I mean, even if you do want to do that, even if you are prone to writing it off as a wacky idea, so what? It's, you know, show me the evidence to rule it out. Show me any evidence to rule it out.
Well, Gene Roddenberry, when he originally pitched his first show or his first major TV show. He got laughed out of so many offices that he finally decided he was going to finance it himself, just about bankrupted him. And, you know, thus comes along Star Trek with all of these crazy ideas of teleporters and computers and diagnostics and all of this wacky, wild stuff. And today you look at the Star Trek and original Star Trek with James T. Kirk. You look at those Star Treks, and they're so comical because they're so, you know.
Yeah, well, the technology, just,
you know.
The techno tricks weren't nearly very good then, but if you watch them and listen to the stories, the underlying message in all of them, and whether I'm not saying I agree with all the messages that were delivered in Star Trek, but it was a good story and it fired the imagination. And for all intents and purposes, the technology that was just a wacko dream to Roddenberry back in the 60s has all come to pass.
Yeah. I think Sasquatch, Abominable Snowman, or Bigfoot, I think it's possible. I don't think
we have
it.
This arrogance.
I don't think we're...
We have this arrogance as humans to think that well, we know where everything is. We know this every inch of this planet. We know every species on the face of the planet, and that's just not true. I mean, we have no idea what's, you know, we think we know everything that's going on in our soul.
I think the lost aircraft is a prime example. The lost aircraft is a prime example of how little we know. I think they guesstimate that we've plotted something like 15% of the seabed, because some of it is just so darn deep that we can only speculate what's down there.
Yeah.
You know, we know very little about our own Earth in those respects. So, you know, like, could there be another, you know, we're finding new species all the time. There was something like 37 different butterflies were found in the Amazon last year alone, or something of that nature. You know, they found a shipwreck from the Second World War recently with $1.5 billion worth of gold on it. You know,
I wonder where that is now.
Imagine it. In somebody's safety deposit. I tell you what, you know, as we're banging through, I can't believe we've got 22 minutes left. I could talk to you for days. But, you know, every day I go through the news and I'm looking for talking points and interesting information that can go up on the Spy Gazette or through the underground stories and what have you. And I came across this one story and I read it and I shook my head and put it to one side. And then I got thinking about it and I thought, you know, it's going to make for a good, interesting chat. Hopefully there's some people out there that this may wind them up enough to call in, I'm not sure. But in the United Kingdom, a drop in rape convictions had prompted concerns over whether rape victims were being properly handled. It was revealed that one woman had her case dismissed, are you ready for this, due to the type of underwear she was wearing when she was raped. That's it. The drop in rape convictions had caused the Director of Public Prosecutions to be concerned about how these things were handled. And it came to light that in one case, a lawyer told a woman who had been raped that they would not pursue her case, and the quote was, particularly bearing in mind the type of underwear that you had on at the time. And this story perpetuated, and I was getting angrier and angrier. So I went in search of to try and find out, okay, what is this magic underwear that makes it impossible for men to say no? She was wearing Spanx. They're nothing. You know, you know, there's no frills, no laces, no dirty little sayings on them, or, you know, like, they're Spanx. The thought of this just appalls me, that a woman would be injured in such a way that society is not prepared to protect them because they didn't like the way a person dressed.
Well, in essence, it's not even just not protecting them; it's vilifying them. It's you're the bad one for being the victim.
It's almost a code of dress, a dress code. If you are wearing X, Y, and Z, you know, and you claim you are raped, your case won't go ahead.
And where was this?
This was in the United Kingdom.
Well, wake up, United Kingdom, and stand up for this woman. You can't have this, because if they do it to her, they will do it to you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I mean, rape is rape. I just don't understand why it's so difficult to get that into the minds of teenagers and adults, but to the lawmakers, rape is rape. I mean, good God, you know? It's got nothing to do with sex. It's an act of brutal assault, you know?
Yeah.
It's
even
an act
if she encouraged
nobly,
it at first. Even if she encouraged
nobly,
it at first and then said, no, I don't want to, that's where
no
it
No place
stop.
In society whatsoever. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I have a cure for this. I think those perpetrators should be castrated, chemically castrated, go about your way, join a choir. You know?
Well, I
don't
know.
I don't think there should be a second chance. I think if you commit that sin, just like with children, you commit that sin, then you should pay that penance, and it never be forgotten. I really do.
Well, I'm not arguing, Colin. I certainly don't have an argument for that. But I think the ones, if the perpetrator is going to be punished, her and her family should be the ones that decide the punishment. And it shouldn't exceed the offense, don't get me wrong, but it should be up to her and her family to both decide the punishment and apply the punishment. And I think that, again, I've said this to you before, that the government imposing all the penalties for us, for the crimes committed against us, number one, depersonalizes it, and number two, they have an agenda. There's always an agenda. When things run, by the time a case like that has run through the judicial system, many people have profited off of it, and messages have been sent, and justice is not done, as far as I'm concerned. Even if
agreed.
You know, it wasn't her that did it. She just spectated while the government applied the punishment.
I maybe this isn't the right phrase, but I was quite impressed with that man here in Calgary that got caught with his DNA after 15 years after a rape. He got convicted, and I was pretty impressed that even though, you know, that this guy was a lower than low life, he chose to admit his guilt, get it over with, go to jail. You know, he's half blind, probably won't make it out of jail anyway. But point being is you know, he saved that young lady a considerable amount of grief having to relive that, and I'm sure it
so
hasn't gone away in our mind. You know?
He was repentant.
Repentant is a word, maybe, you know, or maybe he just realized the gaff was up. He wasn't going to get out of it anyway, and he couldn't afford to. You know, I mean, so you know, whatever is his final reasoning for it, I was very impressed in the respect that he just, you know, took the punishment.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and I hope that gives the young lady closure. I doubt it. I couldn't imagine that. But yes, so United Kingdom, you know, they're going into dark places that, you know, they're not protecting their citizens, and that gives me a great deal of concern. And talking about protection, General Herbert Hawke Carlisle, remember that name, because he's probably going to be the next general that is going to suddenly retire or be told to step down, because General Herbert Hawke Carlisle, who's in charge of the U.S. Air Force in the Pacific, told the press today that Russia has increased its air activity over the Pacific Ocean since the start of the Ukraine crisis, including flights near the California coast, and the U.S. Pacific island of Guam, setting off early warning sensors into and incurring into United States territory. Now, is this just Putin flexing his muscle, or is is he looking for a weak spot?
First of all, I think Putin has a fair bit of muscle. This is a kid that was as a young man, he went through the military in the Soviet Union, and he went through the KGB, and now he's president, and he presents himself as a very tough individual.
He does, yeah. Yeah.
Shirtless now, horse. I mean, I heard
riding fish catcher.
Yeah, that's actually a regurgitated point of view, because I hadn't thought about it before. I heard somebody else say it. But
yeah.
It's true. He's a strong man, and you know, they've controlled the Ukraine for quite a long time now, and I don't think they're going to let it go, and I don't think NATO or the US or any of them.
Yeah, they have let it go.
They still supply all the oil to it, and
that's true. But I mean, in official terms, they had turned over the Crimea to the Ukraine 17 years ago. So,
but it's
you know,
not, it's
but
not,
I agree with you. They still have their major naval base there, and they supply everything but fresh water into there, and Ukraine controls that.
And I come back to, you know, in all the years since World War II, the Cold War and beyond, Americans and Russians have never fired at each other, and they're not going to start now.
Yeah,
it's a game, and what we perhaps be looking at is what other schemes are being hatched beneath this. This is a surface game. This is getting the world's attention for a reason.
Well,
and
I thought it was interesting when this all started to blow up, Hugh. I thought it was interesting because things started to leak out from different little orifices of the intelligence agencies around the world, you know, from the Obama, from the Osama bin Laden being a fake raid to all of the special forces that were involved in that raid are now dead, to Benghazi, and listening to all of this. And then we hear today or yesterday that China's contingency plan for if North Korea, if there's a coup in North Korea, or if North Korea, you know, it goes into battle mode, China's contingency plan of how to deal with those people was released. And I mean, this is damning evidence that China is not prepared to allow them to breathe any more than they have to. They're tolerating North Korea because it's an irritant to the West, but they're prepared to squash them like a bug.
And you don't want to underestimate the power of China.
Yeah. But they are prepared to squash them like a bug. You know, and the thing is North Korea just announced the end of last week. Actually, it was over the weekend, so most of the news agencies, all of the mainstream media chose not to chase the story. But the story came out on Saturday, I believe. It went into the Gazette on Saturday, I think it was. Anyway, North Korea now have nuclear warheads. They've announced that they have them. And now that they have done their Stage 3 rocket tests, and they're going on to a fourth nuclear test, apparently, is coming up. There's all big movements going on, and China has warned them and cautioned them not to go ahead, but it looks like they're going to go ahead with another test. With the fact that North Korea can theoretically, hit the United States, if North Korea can do it, then you can bet your sweet bippy Iran can do it.
I would think.
And, you know, the concern I have is that, you know, unless we learn how to defeat the missile, Forget the nuclear business. We need to defeat the missile. Unless we can learn to do that, then we are going to be at the mercy of some pretty nasty rogue agents within very little time.
I think that's true. Yeah, just weapons in general. You know, we allow, especially in what we like to call a free society here, and yet we're all willing to allow our governments to go and drop the bombs at the drop of a hat. And, you know, we got soldiers that are signing up. And again, I got to point out that I think most of that is because the recruiting offices target poor neighborhoods. They target people wherever the options for these young men may not be quite as massive as, say, for the rich people. And you're probably getting more poor people enlisting, volunteering, and so most seem to care that all these people are going over to fight and die for a cause that, well, let's face it, the only way war is going to stop, the only way the United States will ever be in a state of peace again is when all the terrorists on this planet are wiped out. Otherwise, they'll always be in a state of war, a war against terror. And as long as they're the ones that name who the terrorists are, this war will perpetuate forever.
Well, I was told by a very battle-weary instructor once in my life that, and we were dealing at the time with the IRA in Northern Ireland when I was in. And anyway, we were told that unless you terrorize a terrorist more than they terrorize you, they win. So whatever the vile, disgusting, horrible things you can think of that a terrorist can commit, you have to be prepared to commit those exact same atrocities.
Well, I think I almost have an opposite point of view on that. I think if you're going to play their game, they win.
But their ability to destroy human beings in mass and no retaliation makes no sense at all.
Well, first
we need to
identify who the terrorists are. Okay, pick a president of the United States that say has got its country into two wars simultaneously because of a terrorist. And
in the last 6 minutes, don't you go picking on my poor George Bush again. Just kidding. Go ahead.
I'm sorry that administration begged you to pick on, but I mean, look, who are the terrorists? You know, who are the terrorists? Blair, Tony Blair.
One man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter, right? I mean, we've proven that many, many times.
John Lennon said, Colin, fighting for peace is like fucking for chastity.
Easy now.
That was a quote. That was a quote.
Yeah. I get it. But there lies the problem, isn't it? Is that, you know, you can never lay down your weapons until your enemy lays down his weapons, who will never lay down his weapons until his enemy lays down his weapons. And, you know, one man's freedom fighter is another man's terrorist. I mean,
how do you get out of the cycle first?
You know?
Who steps out first? Yeah. And that's all it takes is somebody stepping out first.
Do you think that's what Barack Obama is trying to do with the initiative that he's got John Kerry on? And because there is no overt military action underway, but there's a hell of a lot of covert going on. But there's no overt might of the United States. It's almost like no, but it's all that there was a lot of bravado, granted. But at the same time, when I was a kid, at the end of the day, when our TV channel actually went off the air, there would be God Save the Gracious Queen, and the Union mm-hmm. Jack would be flying. And then right yeah. after that would be the Pledge of Allegiance of the United States, and then the United States signature, and then they would sign up. And you know, when I watch those kids around the flagpole pledging allegiance to the flag of the United States, I knew I had a friend. I knew I had somebody, a combat in arms. I knew there was somebody there that would never let England or Europe fail. But that isn't there anymore.
No, it's not. The whole fight, like I said, now you're fighting an enemy that can only be identified by the government that has declared the war on it. And, I mean, you know, so they declared war on North Korea during the Korean conflict, and they declared war on North Vietnam during the North. Well, no, there was never any declaration of war there, but now you declare war on somebody that could be anybody. It's a word. It's yeah. a label. It's not a nationality. It's not even a race. It's just a label, and anybody, you know, can apply a label. Anything you do could be considered terrorism. You know, if you're driving down the street and somebody cuts you off and you honk your horn, that could be considered terrorism because it's never been defined.
Right. Well, there's a lot of that coming down the pike. You know, a lot of the new liberal, if you will, definitions of what is this and what is that. And that's definitely going to complicate the system. With 3 minutes left to go, 3.5 anyway. I just want to throw this one into the mix, you, before we leave. President Obama, regarding Benghazi, is now claiming he was only repeating what the intelligence community told him when his administration asserted that the attack in Benghazi began with a spontaneous protest inspired by the internet video. So there's a new rally coming up, and it's hidden mainstream media tomorrow, I believe. If that is the case, if that statement is accurate from what Obama is claiming, then all he has to do is turn over to the Congressional Select Committee who are investigating Benghazi. All he has to do is turn over the daily intelligence briefings with the redacted information of anything not to do with Benghazi.
But they don't even seem willing to do that, Colin. They've been trying to get the emails, emails,
yeah.
and John Kerry's office hasn't. But Darrell Issa, the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, has subpoenaed John Kerry to appear before and answer the question because of the foot dragging.
But now today, apparently, Kerry is saying he won't answer the subpoena, and the White House are claiming that they won't answer the special committee regarding Benghazi. Like, they're going to totally ignore this and shut down the information line and say that's it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know,
of course.
Now,
if that isn't the ultimate in arrogance, eh?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
So, you think, there's going to be millions of dollars spent trying to get this information. It's going to go to court, which will last 5-10 years, maybe. You know, what they do always when they're coming up to an election is let it go to court. The Supreme Court's mm-hmm. it's gonna be 4 years before the Supreme Court will hear it. It's gonna be three years before this, 2 years before that. You know, like, we're gonna be past the midterms, blah blah blah. I mean, it's pathetic. Pathetic.
Yeah.
But it goes on and on and on, Hugh. And speaking of on and on, we got to get out of here because we got to get on. And
you've gone on and on already.
I'll catch you for night talk on Saturday.
Absolutely, I look forward to it.
Looking forward to that too, Hugh. You take care of yourself. Don't do anything I wouldn't do. I'm sure we'll talk before that.
Got a minute? We all have busy lives, and sometimes we forget the small things in life that make many people happy. We work hard, we earn a great deal of money, or we hope to, and we spend a great deal of money. And yet there are those in our world who have no money to spend. There are those in this world that are fighting for survival as we speak. Give a moment to think of those people. Do what you can as a good human being. Do what you can to help their world be a little brighter. Good night, and we'll catch you back here on the next edition of VOCR Radio. This has been a TerraChat Network production.